You could build some kind of shield.
Because,
you know, the fan just makes all kinds of noise. But, like, if you put, like, some sort of... You know, maybe, like, while you're doing the podcast, put an umbrella over your head.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a brilliant idea. Absolutely.
That would work well, and it would block the noise.
Beautiful. Okay, great. And,
you know.
Wonderful. All right. Great. Well, I'll take that under advisement. Okay, good. All right.
Anyway, welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, May 6th, 2012. I'm Sam Minter, and with me is Yvonne Beau, who's sweltering because he has to turn off his fan, otherwise it makes noise on our podcast.
Yes, apparently it does. So hello, everybody. Jeez.
So, yeah, we've got a few topics lined up for you. Before I get into that, I just wanted to, like, mention a follow-up from something I'd said in a previous show. I'd mentioned how my disk was filling up because Address Book had gone wild and was, like, syncing all kinds of images and blah, 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 and it was just gaining space and gaining space and gaining space. And
yeah.
I thought I'd fixed it by turning off the Facebook feature to sync contacts.
Right.
No. Not fixed.
So what's going on?
So
it's still going like a mad lunatic.
As long as I have syncing with iCloud turned on, I seem to have the problem.
Ew.
And actually, even when I turn it off, I think I have the problem in a slightly different form. So I don't know what the hell is going on. So, you know, if any one of our, you know, huge audience of like 5 listeners actually has any idea here on any problem that would be causing the files in user, in the user's library application support / address book folder to just start continuously filling up space, please email me at owlsmay.com and let me know. I've Googled for it, and I found like one other person describing the same problem, but nobody chiming in with an answer for him. So like, yeah, so far what I've done is like I reset. Every once in a while I've just been deleting the whole application support address book folder and letting it recreate itself.
Okay.
I last did that last night, so probably I'm looking at the clock now, probably about 10-15 hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
The address book folder is already about 500 megabytes and growing at I watch it here and the size updates every couple minutes. So it's just, it grows and grows. And so what happens is, you know, if I let it go a while, it's like 20 gig. You know, so I'm starting to think of just setting up an automated script to delete this folder once a day.
That may not be a bad idea.
I shouldn't have to do that.
Well,
you know, and who knows what valuable information might be there. Now it's syncing my actual contacts.
Well, obviously, apparently, it hasn't been that. How many times have you deleted the darn thing?
4 or 5. See, now here's the thing. Since I'm syncing from the cloud, the master version of my address book is in iCloud. So
right.
Every time I delete it, it just recreates my address book by resyncing it from the cloud.
Right.
But
okay, is there a way that you can manipulate the address book that's on the cloud in order to see what the hell's going on with it?
I look at it by logging in and I can't see anything wrong. It looks normal. Now, I could, and my next step here, other than deleting this folder periodically automatically, is save all my addresses locally, delete everything on the cloud, and then resync in the other direction to reset it.
Before you do that, I'm going to suggest one thing. Okay? Why don't you send a note
to Apple
iCloud support and tell them what's going on?
Yeah, I could do that. I had success one time before with that. Like, you know, every once in a while, like, actually,
they fixed my problem with the junk mail.
Yeah, I mean, I've submitted a support ticket directly to Apple a couple times, and once was another address book problem, and I ended up going back and forth with someone on support that it got escalated, and I finally got to an actual human being going back and forth with me an email till they solved the problem. So we could do that again. And I remember one time, a number of years ago, I was still living in New Jersey at the time. I had a problem with the mail program, and started I ended up having an Apple engineer contact me directly. So, you know, these things do happen. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had this issue where for whatever the hell reason, my junk mail kept being tagged as junk mail, okay, but would not move to the fucking junk box, okay? It was driving me crazy, okay? And I sent a note to Apple support a couple of years ago. I think it was over a year and a half ago. It was in the last 2 years. And I kept telling them, you know, what the hell's the point of me having the fucking stuff tagged as junk if it doesn't get out of the fucking mailbox? Okay? And somebody, over a period of 2 weeks, escalated and went around and whatever. I mean, played with it until they freaking found out. And it was an isolated problem with me. It was not a general problem, but he figured out whatever the hell it was and fixed it. And like I said, I traded emails with a real human being who was a real technician. I got his email, and he just traded emails with me back and forth until he figured out what the problem was.
Yeah, maybe I'll try that. If I remember right, the biggest pain in that is Apple actually buries those contact links a little bit. You have to go looking for them. But every time I've looked, I've found them. It just hasn't
I don't know. Last time I looked for it, it was pretty easy to find. It's not really buried. If you go to the Apple webpage and you go to the support
section,
all the different categories, and boom.
Try it at some point soon. I'll try it. I can't guarantee I'll do it in the next hour or whatever, but, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of crap. I just there's so many things I want to do that I have no time for. It's just sad.
Tell me about it. Jesus.
You know,
I need to hire an assistant.
I make choices. So, like, on a weekly basis, pretty much the only things I'm really doing for myself are my political graph updates on my website and this podcast.
I will tell you this. Since my wife is not working anymore, okay, it's been a boon in terms of me getting stuff done, okay?
Right.
Because I've just been leaving her list. Honey, I need you to do A, B, C, and D. And I'm just like, you know, I will say this, that over the next few weeks, I did hire somebody to work for me now, who basically my first day with them, I explained to them, yes, I know I hired you for this, but let me explain to you something about what your job is. Your job is to be number two. And they're like, excuse me? Yeah, I'm number one. You're number two. What that means is that you just do whatever the hell I tell you to do, okay, in general. I don't care what the job title is, okay, all right? Well, if I need presentations done, I need this shit done, I need this other stuff done, or whatever, you do that too. And they were like, okay, no problem. Good. We got that clear? Great. Okay, beautiful. So my last few days, in terms of efficiency at the office, have soared, okay, all right? I have just been
having someone else to do the work for you.
Oh, absolutely. I have just been like, having somebody to do administrative work. Because I have to sell, okay, all right? I got to deal with customers. I got to solve problems. I got to do this. I got to do that, whatever. I'm on the phone, like, all day dealing with this shit. And if I got to do Excel spreadsheets, presentations, and all this crap at the same time, how the hell am I going to deal with anything? Okay? So, all that shit used to get piled up. So, Friday, PowerPoints got done, things got scheduled, and I need somebody who is not an assistant. You don't understand. No, that doesn't help me. I need somebody who could do the shit that I know how to do. Okay? All right? Having an assistant is useless. Okay? All right? That doesn't help me at all. Okay? Because they don't know the business. I need somebody that knows the business like I do, that could be out there selling like I do, that could do this like I do, that if I've got a job that I don't have time to do, they can do, okay? All right? So that's the difference, because people think, well, we just get an assistant. That doesn't help. What's the point? I mean, I got to explain to them the whole thing I would have to do in the first place, okay? Might as well do it myself if I got to spend that much time explaining it, okay? So anyway.
At some point, I'll put in that request. So, we have an actual show planned.
Yes.
So, here is the plan. We're going to talk a little bit about Yahoo's CEO, who I guess was padding his resume or something. Yvonne has some thoughts on that. Then, we'll shift to election 2002. 2002, oh God. that wasn't even a presidential election year.
Look, I would be all for going back to, I don't know. I mean,
anyway, okay. Election 2012. Biden made some comments this morning that people are talking about. There's some stuff going on with Ron Paul, and the Libertarians nominated their candidate. So I want to cover all those kinds of things. And then we're going to wrap it up with civil liberties. A bunch of stuff going on there, too. There's the trial going on in Guantanamo on KSM. I won't try to pronounce it. You want to try to pronounce it? Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, right?
I can't get whatever.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. And Jose Padilla has some stuff going on. And then just in general, wanted to talk a little bit about our current government efforts on expanding or codifying what they currently do in some cases, access to being able to do very broad-based surveillance on pretty much everybody. So that's our plan. Let's take a break real quick, and then we'll come back and start it off with Yahoo. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then, let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, Vaughn. Now, I'll admit, this is one where I sort of saw the headlines that someone was padding their resume, and I might have seen Yahoo, but I didn't click through to any of the articles.
Well, this
I didn't read
the thing,
any of
and it's
it. So what's
one
going
thing that's
on?
Annoying. Well, this is the thing about it. This is the one thing that's annoying me about how people are reporting the story, okay? Because the story is, okay, resume trips up Yahoo's new chief. I'm reading the cover of the Wall Street Journal. Pressure's mounting on Yahoo's board and CEO Scott Thompson after revelations that the internet company recently hired chief's economic record was misstated. Okay, misstated. Now, that sounds, you know, kind of light, right? Okay.
Well, it sounds like a mistake. He accidentally had the wrong year for a job.
Right. Right? That's not what it is. The guy, okay, said in his resume that he had, where the hell's the degree that he was claiming? He held a degree in computer science, okay?
That's fairly specific.
Yeah, you know, he didn't have a degree in computer science. It's in accounting.
That's kind of different.
Yeah, that is not fucking mistake. That's flat out lying.
Did he at least have a minor or something?
What?
Did he at least have a minor in CS or something?
No.
Nothing.
Nothing.
He just flat out made it up.
Yes. I mean, this isn't misstating. This guy flat out lied that he had a fucking degree in computer science. And I'm sorry, that's not an inadvertent mistake. Are you fucking kidding me? You don't recall what you studied in college? Now, by the way, I have met people who don't recall what their degree in college was. It's quite scary, okay, mind you.
Okay. If that's the case, you probably don't want that guy anyway.
That's exactly my point. I mean, for real?
You know, frankly, and especially in these kinds of situations, I kind of don't understand what's going on here. Because, frankly, in most hiring decisions, unless you're talking about someone who's recently out of college,
right?
You're looking at the last 5 years they've been, what they've been doing the last 5 years, maybe the last 10 years. You might scan the earlier stuff, but you want to know what they've actually been doing, what they've proved themselves, how they've been doing at those things. You know, and certainly if you're talking a CEO-level position and college was who the fuck knows how long ago,
right.
Really? Yeah, would it actually be that relevant in the end if they've got like 15 years of good history in between? Why would you bother lying?
That's my point. I mean, that's precisely my point. I mean, the thing is that to me, that's just fireable on the face of the fact that you were just fucking lying. I mean, and why would you feel the urge to lie about that? Okay?
Well, to be frank, one thing I could see is a lot of tech companies, and Yahoo certainly is a tech company, are very heavily biased towards, you know, we want somebody with the CS expertise because it makes you understand what's really going on behind the scenes and not just from a business.
Well, of course, you know, that affects like somebody like you who obviously, you know, working at your employer and you have a degree in computer science, right?
No, I do not.
It's physics, right?
That's right. But, however, you know...
And, of course, me that has worked in technology companies my entire life with this fucking degree in computer science I've got. Oh, no, I don't.
Well, it depends.
I have a finance...
It depends what you're doing and how. I mean, I can tell you that...
That CEO who gives a flying rat's ass if the fucking guy is a computer science major, well, okay?
I'm just trying to present the argument here.
No, I think that the problem is that this guy is a lying scumbag is my point.
Well, yes,
okay?
but like the what I'm trying to get to is what possible thing could be going through the guy's head? And the only thing I can think of is that he felt that not having that on his resume would be a strike against him in a culture that seriously valued that kind of expertise for its higher level management.
Well, actually, I think that the problem is probably, as has happened with other candidates that have done this before, is that the guy probably lied many years ago on his resume about this in order to get some job.
When he
and
was
then
some
had to,
peon.
Right,
first,
and then and
job.
Then has lived with that lie his fucking entire life, okay, because he fucking lied in the first place to get the damn job.
Yep.
Okay? And, you know, now it's just, you know, never... You know, took that off of there and just, I mean, let's face it, resume lying is just outrageous out there.
But,
and,
you know, I, even there, you know, let's say I lied on my resume to get my first job out of college. Why the fuck wouldn't I change it before I applied for my second job?
I totally agree.
It's not like the people hiring you for the second job are going to ask the first job for the copy of your resume you submitted 5 years ago.
Totally agree.
It's just,
I just think it doesn't say much good about the person that they had to do that.
Yeah, and look, if you analyzed my resume down to every little detail, you'd probably find weirdnesses there, because like there is stuff I can't really remember, like the exact date I.
Well, but you don't remember what happened 2 years ago, for God's sake.
No, or like, you know, I'll give you the biggest example. Like, what was my actual exact title at various points in my career? Because it's changed even within one job.
But that's a little bit different.
You know,
okay, all right.
And so, like, I'll remember the last title I had at some position, and I'll put that, you know? But that's different than making up a degree entirely, or making up a job entirely, or making up, you know... Yeah, I just don't get... Like, in all of these, it's like, why? Like, well, presumably this guy's history over the last 10, 15 years was good and compelling, and that was the primary factor in why Yahoo wanted to hire him.
Mm-hmm.
I presume you're right, and they weren't saying, well, you know, he had a CS degree, and he had a 3.2 GPA, so we must be... So he must be hiring the right guy.
Yeah.
Now, I have heard stories that some companies, Google... Like, even for senior-level positions, go back and not only look at your college career, but ask for transcripts. And I think that's stupid.
They're at it, or fucking minds. They want college transcripts?
Like, did you take the right classes in college? Not just, you know, anyway.
That's just retarded.
Now, that may not be true. I don't know. I've heard that rumor.
Mm. Well, I think that...
So is he going to get fired?
Well, there is a lot of pressure mounting on him, and if history serves, you know, correctly,
he'll submit his resignation in a couple of days.
He'll probably not be CEO of Yahoo much longer, because almost every time that something like this has happened, the CEO has not survived.
But he'll still get a nice severance package.
I'm sure he will.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be just fine. I just think this whole fucking, like, it's just reprehensible. I mean,
reprehensible or not, I think it's just stupid.
I'll go with you. Yeah, I think it's more stupid than anything else. I agree.
This is Future Sam with a quick update. After we recorded the show, later in the week, the CEO of Yahoo came out to say that he actually had never given a paper resume to Yahoo. Now, I'm not sure how much this matters, if he either misrepresented his history or allowed them to continue to believe something he knew was untrue. Either way, it's the same kind of thing. But anyway, he says he never gave him a paper resume. We'll see how that plays out, I guess. Or we'll never talk about it again. You know, anything else to say about Yahoo in general? I mean, Yahoo lately in the last few years hasn't been exactly doing the best.
No, not particularly. I mean, they're just...
So is this a bottom-of-the-barrel CEO pick to begin with?
I don't know, actually. I never even heard of this guy, to be honest with you. You know, you remember that they recently fired Carol Bartz. That became a big thing because of the way they fired her. And because she was very
combative.
Because
they emailed her or something, right?
Yeah, they told her on over the phone, something like that. And while she was on vacation or some shit like that, it was, you know... But I don't know. I mean, Yahoo has been sliding into – they're still – look, Yahoo is still a pretty big company with big revenue. I mean, you know, I know that probably you and I – we. I mean, when's the last time you went to Yahoo?
Probably the last time we were on the show and talked about how Yahoo is dead and when was the last time we went to Yahoo.
Right. Yahoo? But let me put it to you this way. Their current market capitalization right now is still $18.4 billion. I mean, they're still a company with over $1 billion in annual profit. So obviously, I mean,
so I will say, you know, Yahoo does have Flickr, and so
they have Flickr.
Occasionally use Flickr, although less than I used to. I used it for a while as my primary way of posting images quickly to my my blog, but the WordPress software improved, and now I can do it directly more easily. So I do that now.
I mean, let's see. What I mean,
I just went to Yahoo's main site for the first time in years, and it looks like crap. I'm not going back here until next time we talk about it.
Right. Here's a question I got. You mentioned Flickr, okay? That brings me to something. What's the big deal with Instagram? Why is everybody having a hard-on about Instagram? Well, now that you mentioned Flickr, I mean, it brings me to that since Facebook decided to pay $1 billion for Instagram. Why has everybody got such a hard-on for Instagram?
I have not the slightest fucking clue.
okay.
Look, I mean, there are a couple things that people said. First of all, you know, okay, it's got some cool filters. But, you know, you don't need to pay $1 billion for a handful of cool filters.
I mean,
you know.
You know, we're two idiots. Look. Years ago, I don't know if you remember, like a group, like three of us or whatever, we kept talking about trying to do a startup, right, or whatever. And honestly, we were so stupid because we could have put together, I could have made a fucking kick-ass PowerPoint presentation with some bullshit business plan. We could have put together just a whole bunch of shit, and we could have pulled a Mark Cuban, and maybe I could get us a couple of billion. But I bet you I could have gotten us at least 50 to 100 million.
Hey, it's not too late. The venture capitalists are still giving out money.
I know they're this whole thing is just coming back. Let's face it, they paid $1 billion for Instagram, for God's sake.
And you know, all the talk about this is like bubble. Yes.
Well, there is, but here's the thing about the bubble. It's not anywhere like what it was before. I mean, before it was just no. I mean, that was just outrageous. I mean, let's face it, the top 10 market cap companies were all basically vapor at that time, okay? And right now, that is – and top 10, you know, in the whole stock market. Right now, it's nowhere near the case. Are a couple of people paying $500 million, $1 billion or something here or whatever? Yeah. But nobody's valuing a fucking AOL at $200 billion.
Give it a couple years.
And I don't think that – well –
Anyway, the thing back to Instagram. The other thing people were talking about is, well, they had like this whole network of, yeah, you know, because it wasn't just the pictures; it was a social sharing thing where you would log into Instagram and see what people were sharing. And so there was some thought that, you know, there were people who were sharing images there in a smaller private group that weren't sharing on Facebook.
Okay.
And so Facebook wanted those people. But the reality is those users were almost all on Facebook anyway. They're not like gaining a bunch of users. And who the fuck cares if you get, you know, a few hundred thousand more? Facebook's got like 20 billion people. Not quite literally, but, you know.
Well, 1 billion.
They're coming up on 1 billion, right?
Yep.
you know, and you know, one out of six people on the planet or whatever, you know?
Right. Pretty much.
The only thing that I've heard people say that might make sense is Zuckerberg was basically like, look, we want to remove, yeah, there might be some people out there who, when valuing our IPO, are going to be thinking, but what about these upstart things like Instagram? And, you know, Instagram's really good on mobile, and Facebook isn't really great on mobile yet. So why don't we just grab it to take that argument out of play? And that it may not actually be worth $1 billion in and of itself, but maybe it'll take $1 billion out of the doubt about, you know, about Facebook and cause Facebook's IPO numbers to be $1 billion higher.
I don't know about that, but, you know.
And also the interesting thing is the way Facebook is structured with ownership and everything, with Zuckerberg having, you know, more than 50% of voting rights, so complete control. You know, he did this first.
I honestly and then told do the board not like this whole thing as Zuckerberg as CEO and having complete control. I think he'll self-destruct within, like, 3 years and running a major corporation. I'm not saying that Facebook will self-destruct. I'm saying that Zuckerberg
will.
It is, right. Okay? So.
Well, yeah, we've talked before. I think there's a bubble coming in the social networking stuff, too, that, you know, everyone seems to think that because of the critical mass, you know, Facebook is it, and it won't go the same way of all the social networking sites before. I think that is a pipe dream. It may take longer. It may be more entrenched, sort of like Microsoft is, where, mm-hmm. you know, it takes a long time before someone displaces it.
But everybody gets displaced.
Everyone gets displaced eventually. And it's just a matter of time and the right things. And, you know, someone has to come up with a better product that's more compelling at the same time that people are getting annoyed with Facebook.
Right.
You know, because the biggest problem with the social networking kind of stuff is, like, as Google Plus is finding out, you know, the new site may have a lot of cool stuff, but if all your friends aren't there, then why the fuck are you going to go there?
That's exactly right. The other day I went and I logged into my Google Plus account, and I was like, why? I went and I logged in, and I looked at it for 2 seconds, and I'm like, why the fuck am I here again?
Yeah, we talked about that last week. You have to subscribe to some interesting people.
I don't want to go through that job. It's work.
So anyway, we'll see. I mean, it just takes the right combination of missteps and people flee you, you know, and say, okay, that's it. I'm fed up with this shit. You know, and the latest trend, well, not the latest trend, has been going on all along. You know, Facebook is more and more and more shoving stuff down your throat. You know, they're changing, the default order you see things in is no longer in chronological order. They've started adding highlighted stories to your wall. They've start, or to your feed, whatever they call it these days. All kinds of crap. And, you know, it's busy and cluttered and blah, blah, blah. And there's more and more stories from people, like, playing their games or reading their news stories or whatever. And at a certain point, people will be like, oh, okay, the signal-to-noise ratio is now shit. I'm not going to bother anymore, you know?
Yep.
We're not there yet. But at some point, you'll hit that. And maybe Facebook will be smart and pull back at just the right time. I don't know.
Ah, bullshit. Well, but anyway.
We've gone far from our original topic.
Yes. Yes.
Let's take another break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk what was it, election 2002?
Yes.
Yes, 2002. We'll be right back with actually this year's election. We'll be back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on,
baby. Let's do the twist. Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tune it up all the way.
I got a dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620 and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com. The Valley.
Okay. Election! So I wanted to hit at least 3 points. Biden, Ron Paul, and Libertarians. So which one do you want to talk about first, Yvonne?
I don't know. Let's talk about Biden.
This is Sam from the future again. For the next few minutes, Yvonne and I talk about Joe Biden's comments on gay marriage and the position that puts the Obama administration in, given Obama's previous equivocation on the subject and the whole pretense of evolving on the issue, even though it's fairly clear where he really stood. He just wasn't willing to say it. Obviously, after we recorded this on Sunday, of course, a little bit later in the week, Obama came out, he did an interview, and he finally came out in favor of gay marriage, in part due to the pressure that Biden's comments put on him for this. We'll see how this affects his prospects in the election and everything else, and undoubtedly Yvonne and I will talk about that this next weekend on the show. But in the meantime, here's our discussion on the position on gay marriage prior to Obama coming out in favor of it. Okay, so Biden, this is, as we record this, it's Sunday, May 6th. And earlier today on Meet the Press, I believe it was Meet the Press and not one of the other Sunday shows. But anyway, Biden was on and he mentioned that he was perfectly comfortable with gay marriage. I forget his exact words.
Actually, apparently it was exactly what you just said, perfectly comfortable.
Perfectly comfortable.
I love the quote. Yep.
Now, anyway, the reason this immediately caught notice and all kinds of people, I was looking on Twitter, but other places too, all kinds of people were like, whoa, Biden just went ahead of the administration. Because the administration in general, their position has been that they still believe marriages between a man and a woman. They're not willing to go further than that. They don't believe in discrimination against homosexuals, but marriage is something special and the federal government shouldn't, blah, blah, blah. And Obama has said on a number of times that his position is evolving over time.
Mm-hmm.
But Biden sort of went ahead of that. And then immediately, as soon as Meet the Press aired, all kinds of people from Biden's staff, from the Obama campaign, from Obama's office were saying, no. Actually, Biden didn't really mean that. Biden's exactly the same place everybody else is. We believe, like, you know, it's not time for gay marriage, but, you know, homosexuals shouldn't be discriminated against, blah, 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 and trying to walk it back. And the whole thing on this is that this is one area where the Obama administration has been particularly weaselly, okay? Because I think it's pretty damn obvious that the real situation is that, yes, they're for gay marriage in the White House. Obama thinks it would be a fine, good idea. So does Biden. But they realize that right now it's a politically sensitive issue. They don't have the numbers on their side.
Yeah, it's a political little hot potato, right. Yeah.
You know, it's not sort of at the level where America is overwhelmingly for this. It's an election year. They're worried about losing voters who are, you know, sort of moderates, but not quite there yet on gay marriage. And so they come up with a bullshit line about how their views are evolving, marriages between a man and a woman, blah, blah, blah. And sort of the expectation almost everybody has is what this basically means as, you know, it's not politically the time yet. But as soon as it is, we're going to be for this. And that's just very...
And by the way, if you guys aren't clear, like, I think that I speak for both of us. Me and Sam are all for fucking gay marriage.
I'll tell you, my position is a little bit different.
Yours is a different? Okay.
My position is actually federal government has no business in the... government
in regulating marriage.
In marriage.
Right,
you know,
right.
The government should treat everybody as individuals. The government should have no say whatsoever in marriage whatsoever. It should be individual contracts between people, whatever the hell they want, with whomever they want, in whatever way they want, with whatever terms they want. I think that would be the ideal situation. I think government should recognize paternity and maternity to recognize the obligation that you get when you bring a child into this world or you adopt a child or whatever, anything along those lines. But the actual relationship, I don't think it should give you tax breaks. I don't think it should be different in your taxes. I think the government should treat everybody as individuals, and there shouldn't be no such thing as government-recognized marriage, even for straights. That's my actual position. Now, my reality position is what I just said will never happen, ever, in this country or probably any other. So right. Therefore,
not in our lifetimes, anyway.
So given that marriage exists, I think that there's no reason that gay marriage shouldn't be allowed.
I think that they should be allowed the pleasure and displeasure of it just as well as we are. Let's face it, I got to suffer all the time about it. What the hell? So should they. Actually, I love my wife very much. So
just to clarify, all right?
Yes.
Hey, you know, everybody out there who's listening knows that, you know, there are ups and downs to every marriage.
Yes. But you know, like, I mean, the one thing is that I kind of love my marriage. We have a great time. So.
Yeah. And yep. I'm not complaining either. It's going well. But anyway, I think for the most part, I think what the Obama administration is doing here is, well, actually, it's very typical for them. One of the things the Obama administration so far is almost a defining feature of it, is picking their battles very carefully and only choosing to fight things that they feel very strongly that they can win.
Yeah, I mean, just fighting something, just, you know, I am a lot like that myself, okay? So I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not just going to get into a fucking fight just to get into a fucking fight, okay? You know, all you do is expend a lot of valuable capital and get nowhere, okay? And that's really doesn't get you anything. If you're gonna get into a fight, it's because you have a good possibility of winning. Just to get into a fight for losing, just to prove a point, in my opinion, is a big fucking waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, okay? And so far, I mean, the Obama administration went to the bat for the healthcare stuff, and that was touch and go, and just barely made it in the end. But that's kind of the exception. In almost all other cases, and you could say actually going into it, they probably thought they had a better shot than they...
That's right.
You know, they thought they had a clear shot at it, and it ended up being a lot harder than they anticipated.
But still, even at the end, they still got...
Right, but...
It still went through.
But for the most part, you know, and so I completely believe that as soon as they feel they have the numbers in the House and the Senate... And in the polling of the population, they would do this in an instant. They just look at it right now and say, you know, this is a battle that if we fought it right now, we would probably not win. So we're not going to do it right now.
But it's not a far off moment when this battle will be won. That's my feeling right now. So
yeah, I think we're still a few years out.
I'm not saying like months. I'm saying in a couple of years, but it's not going to be, you know. It's not like it'll be. I'm going to be 70 years old when this battle.
And a number of people have done like actual sort of statistical regressions on this, on the trends of popular support for gay marriage.
Yes,
in individual states and sort mm-hmm. of. You could probably Google...
The tipping point, according to those graphs, is pretty soon.
Yeah, you could probably Google and find those graphs, but they do it sort of state by state. In what year will each state pass, like, 50% support of gay marriage? And, you know, some states, it's going to be a while. But, yeah, there are going to be more and more every year. And at a certain
how do I
point,
have a feeling that Alabama isn't national. Probably, like, taking gay marriage on pretty soon? But anyway.
It quite possibly you are right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I understand where the administration is coming from, but it looks really craven, you know, and in a lot of these areas, you just wish they would actually say, I understand it's not time for this fight, but you wish they would at least say.
By the way, I just logged on into Huffington Post, just take a look, and it's like this incredibly gigantic, huge, bold-faced headline that says, Biden, I'm comfortable with gay marriage!
Yeah, so but you kind of wish they would just come out and say, you know, we're for this, we wish it would happen, but it's politically not time yet. It's not the right time to do this yet. We would not succeed if we tried. But yes, we do support this. So Anyway, more election stuff. Two things going on that I want to make sure we cover. One is Ron Paul. Now, we've said for a long time, the nomination fight is over. Romney is the nominee.
Yes, okay? If you none of you guys got the memo, we're sending it out now.
And Ron Paul in specific has already been mathematically eliminated. So in order to actually get the nomination, he would have to not only win every delegate still up for grabs, but take a whole bunch away from Romney. You know, not going to happen. So, but what is going on is there's still a lot, the Ron Paul folks are engaging in like day-to-day trench warfare on getting delegates and going through the state processes. So, for instance, they already got the majority of delegates in Minnesota. They did not win the original caucuses in Minnesota, by the way. They did not have the most votes, but they do have the most delegates coming out of that state. It looks like the same is going to be true of Maine. That's getting finalized this weekend. It looks like the same may be true of Iowa. If he gets the majority of delegates, and I believe it's five states, then he can his name can actually be put into nomination at the convention. So he's, A, setting up the ability to cause some chaos at the convention and, like, make it not run quite as smoothly as the Romney folks would like. But there's more than just that. Because what he's doing is in many states where the delegates are determined exactly by the primary vote. So, for instance, in the state of Massachusetts, Romney won handily. I believe he actually got all of the delegates from Massachusetts in terms of what they have to be pledged for on the first round ballot at the convention. However, they still have to pick actual human being individuals. And the Ron Paul folks have been showing up at those meetings and electing their own folks. So while the Massachusetts delegation may be officially 100% pledged to Romney, the actual people going to the convention have a significant fraction of Ron Paul supporters. So now what does this mean? Well, on the off chance there was a second ballot, it means they would be free to vote for Ron Paul or whoever they wanted. Now, absent Romney dropping out, that's not going to happen. But it also means they get to vote on all the procedural crap that happens at the convention. They get to vote on the platform. They get to vote on the agenda. They get to vote on who is chairman of the convention. There's all kinds of crap like that that they can do that can potentially, you know, cause weirdness and chaos at the convention. And modern political conventions are set up to be, you know, multi-day campaign commercials. So the thing that the Romney folks don't want is every day of that campaign getting, instead of, you know, hear the speeches from the guys talking about how good Romney is, okay, well, we also have some speeches about how good Ron Paul is. And we have floor battles where they're forcing you to actually do voice votes or to do counted votes on all kinds of procedural issues instead of just saying, okay, we nominate the chair, move on. All kinds of stuff can be done there. And also, and perhaps even more importantly in the long run, through these processes, in quite a number of states, Ron Paul is actually getting his folks elected to important positions in the state party apparatus that will determine the rules for 2016. And Ron Paul is probably not going to run again in 2016, but I bet
you... Why don't you think he would? I mean, I would think that if he's healthy and whatever, he'd probably keep running until he probably drops dead.
I think he's said that he's done.
You think? Okay.
He's dropping out. He's leaving the House of Representatives. He's said this is his last time. He's setting it up for his son, Rand Paul.
Okay.
Yeah, or others, but I think it's probably Rand. And Rand may run for president as early as 2016. He may wait till 2020. I don't know, but as he's taking over these party apparatus, he potentially has a lot of influence. You know, and he's learned that the Republican Party had this happen before, the extreme pro-life movement. started taking over state parties this way about 15 years ago. And are, to a large extent, the reason why the Republican Party has moved rightward on social issues over the last couple of decades. And this was a big part of what the moral majority, if you remember them way back when, part of their strategy was winning over the party in local offices and in party offices. And through that process, they were able to move the whole party in their direction. And I think that's what Ron Paul's been doing. He's been building that political machine to sort of push for a more libertarian version of the Republican Party. And I don't know if it's going to work or not, but it and whether it'll be in enough states and enough areas to have a significant influence. But, you know, it's certainly... Yeah, we've talked before about how divided the Republican Party is between its factions. And mm-hmm. this is one of them. And this has been one of the most organized ones in terms of, you know, in these little behind-the-scenes meetings. Basically, what happens in a lot of these meetings is these are esoteric party wonk meetings that usually almost nobody shows up to. So if all of a sudden you organize and get a bunch of your guys to show up to these meetings, you can take over. So anyway, that's interesting. Let's see. I want to finish up real quick. We're almost out of time. The Libertarians did, as expected, nominate Gary Johnson as their nominee for president. He is the he's a former governor of New Mexico. He was running as a Republican until right before Iowa. So he was in a lot of the Republican debates early on, but just wasn't getting traction. So he dropped out and is running as a Libertarian instead. You know, I'll be honest, I kind of liked him in the debates. He's sort of like, he's got a lot of the things that, you know, make Ron Paul interesting to me in terms of civil liberties and such, but without a lot of the baggage of the craziness. You know, he's not going on talking about the gold standard. You know, he doesn't have a lot of baggage of, you know, racism and stuff in his past, you know, but he's got a lot of the things I do like. And he's got actual experience in a as a governor. So I'm not going to say a lot more right now other than to say, you know, I'm actually going to be
basically
taking a serious,
if I take
serious
it from you, this candidate
November.
Is basically not as off the reservation anywhere as the Ron Paul was.
Yes, I think he is. He's got a lot of libertarian tendencies, but they are tuned by practicality. And I really need to do a lot more research about him, to be honest. And there may be things, positions he supports, and things in his past that may make me not really excited about him. But at the moment, my thought is, I'm going to be giving him serious consideration because our next segment is on civil liberties. That is an issue that really disturbs me in terms of the direction things have been going. And Obama's no good on it. Romney's worse, but Obama's pretty sucky when it comes to civil liberties stuff. And I would seriously consider a candidate who's good in that area.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, I'll probably have more to say about him as we get closer to November and as I do more research, but we'll see. But I will give him serious consideration.
All right.
And,
well,
America's Elect is having problems. We talked about them last week. They delayed their primary / caucus / online whatever.
Oh, the online caucus got delayed? Okay.
It got delayed because none of the candidates qualified.
Oh.
Well, by their own rules, each candidate had to have a certain amount of support. You know, you sign up for America's Elect, and then you indicate your support for various candidates. And they require that all of the candidates have a certain amount of support from all 50 states, and none of the candidates met that bar. So they delayed their process by a couple weeks. We'll see what happens. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk civil liberties and stuff. Ooh. VR. So okay. I had some general surveillance stuff, but you had some specifics on KSM and Padilla. So let's talk about the specifics first, and then we'll get more general.
Well, the thing is that, you know, this week, a couple of things happened. We had this whole thing where they tried, you know, you and I have never been a fan of this whole military tribunal crap. Okay, all right, the Bush administration after September 11th, they tried to pass this thing where there were the ability to name people, like designate where they wanted to try to designate where the fuck they wanted as an enemy combatant, and wanted to put them through this military tribunal process, okay, that basically circumvented our court system as it existed. And, you know, it was fraught with problems since day zero because of the way they detained people, the fact that they, you know, never gave them the there were just a lot of the stuff that in order to extract information or use torture, it wasn't – none of the evidence that was gathered was reliable, you know, for the most part. It seemed in a way to be able to convict anybody. So,
and you know, let me say on one of these things, I think you have a fundamental choice. Like the argument in many cases was – and I don't buy it for torture, but in any case, the argument was our primary concern was getting information in order to prevent future attacks. And so that trumped anything about, you know, having a proper evidence chain for a later trial. And I think fundamentally, okay, if you make that call, if you make the call that there's something more important than generating the evidence for the trial, then part of that call is you may not be able to do a proper trial, and at some point you may need to let the guy go.
But that's even at the best case scenario. The worst case is that the reality is that it's been proven that everybody kept telling the administration that torture was never a reliable way to get information from informants.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's never worked very well. What you get is people is like, you know, like the old adage in accounting that they used to say, you know, they still say is like, if you torture the numbers long enough, they will confess. Okay.
Right.
They'll confess to anything, for God's sake. They're tortured. Just stop getting tortured, okay? It's not a reliable way to get information. So, and what they did is, what they wound up doing is a double whammy of, number one, not getting any reliable information for the most part, and number two, not being able to convict, you know, not being able to prosecute these people of anything. So we wound up with all these fucking people in limbo right now, which we still have not been able to properly prosecute. I mean, one of the people – so this week we had two things happen. Number one was that Jose Padilla, who 3 years after the administration finally realized that trying to get away with this whole fucking thing of taking a U.S. citizen, capturing a U.S. soil, and designating any enemy combatant was not going to get him anywhere. They tried him in federal court. They convicted him a number of years ago, but Jose Padilla had filed a lawsuit against the administration, okay, for torturing him, okay? Now, this week, the one thing is that he was suing – instead of the administration, he was suing specifically the attorney who had written the document, okay, that justified the use of torture, okay?
Right.
And this is where it got a little bit tricky, where this week the Circuit Court of Appeals basically said – they basically said that you couldn't sue the person, okay? All right, I think is what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
And so the case is still going on around, and right now, I mean, this has been going around for the last 3 years. Now, I don't know what your thoughts are on that part. I mean, whether who is responsible when an administration goes and has an attorney to write an opinion, okay, all right, as reprehensible as you think it may be, but it was under the mandate of an administration, who is the responsible person to be?
I don't think it's that lawyer. I think, frankly, the whole way these legal briefs work, I think, is bogus. Which is they have the administration lawyer put out something that they say something they believe something is legal or constitutional.
Right.
And then therefore anybody who acts in the administration based on that evaluation is therefore immune from prosecution, even if later they determine that lawyer was wrong. I think that's bogus. The legal advice was the legal advice. If I go and get a lawyer to tell me that it's okay if I go steal from the 7-Eleven, and then I go steal from the 7-Eleven and try to use in my defense that my lawyer told me it was okay, I'd be laughed out of court and thrown in jail.
That's absolutely true. I agree.
And that's what should happen in this case. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care if you got bad legal advice. If you acted on it and you tortured somebody, you should be going to jail. If you authorized torture based on that legal advice, you should be prosecuted. I think Dick Cheney and George Bush themselves should be being held accountable for this stuff, as well as quite a few other members of the administration. Like, the fact that the lawyer gave bad advice, at worst, I think he should be disbarred. But, yeah. Like, you know, the people who acted on the advice are the ones who should be, you know, in trouble.
And let's face it, it wasn't like that was the only opinion they
had. I know. Well, and
because that's the other thing.
And there's evidence that happened, like, just recently there was an article, and I don't know where it was, but there was somebody from the State Department who came out with an opposing memo and basically said, the stuff coming out of here is bullshit. This is illegal. We shouldn't be doing it. These folks are subject to the Geneva Convention. I think that was his main argument, was Geneva Convention. And the administration not only said, we're going to ignore this advice from this guy in the State Department, but we want all copies of his memo destroyed.
Right. That shows that they know that this was wrong and they chose to ignore it. I mean, I agree.
The Obama administration, this is what I was saying, the Obama administration does not have a good record on this stuff. One of the first things they decided when they came into office, or maybe even beforehand, was that they would not go after the previous administration for anything. Now, the argument, of course, is that sets a bad precedent. The next administration could go after us. It could become a partisan thing where Republicans are always going after Democrats and Democrats are always going after Republicans. I understand that concern. But if the previous administration did things that broke the law, were unconstitutional, violated treaties that America has signed and ratified...
I think
ratified,
the problem is the people who should be
then they should
prosecuting
be
an administration... The people who should be prosecuting an administration is not the next administration. It should be Congress. Okay?
Okay. I can
Congress
see
is the one that should be
I'll disagree.
And like, you know what? And like freaking bringing, you know, making sure that people get, you know, there should be a special prosecutor, which
Not Congress. A special Congress is still... look, the whole thing is Congress is not responsible for enforcing the laws. Congress passed these laws. The laws were already on the books. It is therefore the administration's responsibility to ensure those laws are enforced.
But, for example, when, you know, Watergate happened, for example, or any of these things.
Here's the reason that it will never happen. Now, theoretically, the prosecutor's office is independent of the White House, so maybe it could. But the reason it'll never generally happen is because... Guess what? What these laws are that would be prosecuted are laws that limit the power of the executive.
Right.
No president is, well, almost no president, is ever going to voluntarily do something that further restricts the power of the White House. They're never going to say, you know, I actually shouldn't have the freedom to do this. Because even if the previous president did things they didn't like, they're like, well, I won't do this, you know, and I need the flexibility and I don't want Congress to be able to tell me what I can and can't do.
Yeah.
And so you're in a catch-22 with this kind of stuff. And so you get things like, you know, blatant ignoring of existing laws, you know, in the Bush administration that will never ever see any consequences because of it. And, you know, frankly, part of it is because the Obama administration is also ignoring the laws it doesn't want to follow.
That's right.
And so if they set a precedent, then yeah, they're damn right the next Republican administration would probably go after them for that.
Mm.
And, you know, there's one solution to that. Follow the damn laws. But it's not like anybody wants to do that.
Right. So... Yeah, and so the whole thing that I brought this up is because this week, aside from the Padilla decision, let's face it, they took all these people, they tried to have this trial, the military tribunal in Guantanamo, and it just turned into a whole clusterfuck, okay? I mean, nothing really got done. Nobody wanted to respond to any of the questions. It turned into a massive protest. And so basically, the reality is that we have not we've got these people that's still detained. It's less people than before. We still haven't figured out how to deal with them. I gotta be honest with you. I'm coming to the fucking conclusion, you know what? They should just fucking let them all go.
Yeah. Well, and the way this administration works, they'd let them go and then drop a missile on them 10 seconds later anyway, so.
Well, that may be true, but...
Here, have fun. Go to Afghanistan. Never mind that little tracking button we put on you.
Well, I mean, on a separate note, they did say, apparently, aren't we pulling out of Afghanistan finally in a disagreement that they signed in 2014?
The agreement recently is how the details of our role after the pullout. The timetable for the pullout had been set a long time ago.
Right. So, I mean, so we're going to leave there too, finally.
Yeah. Looks that way. Then the place is going to fall apart into chaos and, you know, oh well.
Oh well. Well, it was chaos before anyway.
Yeah.
The Taliban
will be back in charge within a year after we leave.
Look, one thing that somebody mentioned was that a lot of these villagers, because they really don't say they don't have internet, or they don't have satellite, or they don't have anything. And let's face it, September 11th happened such a fucking long time ago already anyway. None of these fucking people even know why the hell we're there.
Right.
They don't know what the hell happened. They're like, why the fuck are all these Americans around here in the first place?
Yeah, anyway, so I did want to hit another thing on the civil liberties stuff. I want to point people at two recent articles. One by Glenn Greenwald in Salon. The title is Surveillance State Democracy. You can Google it. It's got a long URL. And the other is something EFF put out on May 4th. DOJ official, any privacy protection is too much privacy protection for cell phone tracking. Basically, these have a common theme. The DOJ official was theoretically talking for himself, not for the administration. But in both cases, what we're talking about is that the government is looking for more and more codification around the ability to, in the one case, let's talk the DOJ official on cell phone. Basically, they right now it is essentially a routine act. If police want to get your location tracking information from a cell phone company, they just ask the cell phone company pay a fee, and the cell phone company gives it to them. There's no warrant required, no nothing. They just say, "Hey, we want to know where Sam's been," and they're like, and the AT&T's like, "Okay, that'll be $500, please." And they're like, "Here's your $500. Okay, here's where Sam's been over the last 2 months." You know, that's all it takes. Just a request. And some paperwork and some money. They basically, there have been some very halting efforts to sort of roll that back and put procedures on it and transparency so that if you want that kind of information, maybe you need a warrant or at least there's some kind of... record appeals process, something along it. And basically the DOJ is saying that no, this needs to be completely, this is critical. If we did not have the ability to get locations on people whenever we wanted, it would cripple law enforcement. And
no, yeah, they can fucking bite me. I mean, Jesus.
My immediate reaction is if that's true, then law enforcement needs to fucking be crippled. You know, and then on the surveillance
stuff... Then I guess law enforcement has been crippled its entire history, for God's sake. How the hell did we do any law enforcement before in the first place?
Without
doing this.
This crippling law enforcement is the entire fucking point of the Fourth Amendment.
Yes!
I mean, I wouldn't use the word crippling.
Absolutely!
But the point is that you want to have checks and balances, and before police can go watch you and dig into you and... They have to have a reason. They have to prove that they have reason. It can't just be a unilateral decision. There has to be a process. Now, I wish the private corporations like AT&T and other companies that are affected by this kind of stuff, when they got this kind of request, would just have a standard policy of saying, come back with a warrant.
I agree.
But they don't. They have a standard policy of cooperation. And this goes for not just phone companies, but almost every internet.
I will tell you this, that in order to avoid lawsuits, I will tell you that they do require a certain set of documentation. I for some reason happened to get a little bit familiar with this, and
they require it,
entire process.
Yes, they require documentation. They require you to fill out, you know, some forms and some blah blah blah. It does not require, you know, a judge weighing in and saying yes, this is valid.
Right. Well, the thing is that, you know, I guess one of the things that people say is that you can request the information, whether it becomes – you see, what you could wind up jeopardizing later is if you don't properly get a warrant, whether a judge actually accepts the evidence as admissible later on. Now, you know, I know that
– Yeah, in almost all cases, that has not been an issue. And even where it has been, it's like, you know, the poison fruit whatever doesn't – It hasn't stopped people. Let's just put it that way. There has not been precedent saying that this is invalid, and in fact, like with the warrantless wiretapping that happened in the Bush administration, where there was widespread wiretapping.
Right.
What happened there is Congress later passed a law retroactively making
actively.
It legal,
I know. I remember that. That
and,
was
and giving immunity to all the companies that were being sued over this because there
I know.
There were people being suing and saying, "Hey, AT&T, your privacy policy says you're not going to give out my information for no reason, and here you are giving it to the government with no warrant."
Right.
And so they all got immunity for that. The other thing that's going on, the Glenn Greenwald article talks about this, and it actually references, by the way, a report from our friend from college, Declan McCullough, on CNET, where there are the administration, and we're talking the Obama administration now, is going to the internet industry and various internet companies trying to make sure that they're asking for there to be a codified thing that any company building a communication mechanism of any sort build in backdoors for government surveillance.
Yes, I know.
You know, and so, and you know, they already have this with the phone companies, but they want to make it so that, you know, you're calling on Skype and the government wants to listen in, they can. You're communicating back and forth with private messages on Facebook with somebody, government wants to snoop in, they can. You know, email, they can. Now, a lot of these things, frankly, weren't built very securely to begin with. And so there are ways that you could snoop in regardless. But one of the things that people have been doing is people have been demanding higher levels of protection, more encryption, more whatever, more privacy on these things. And the government is basically saying, whatever you build, if you're building something that allows person A to talk to person B, you need to make sure there's a way we can eavesdrop.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, and they're saying that this is required. The law hasn't been passed yet, but the way that the way the administration, and this is not new to this administration, but the way they do is they lobby the industries affected, try to get industries affected to agree, and then they take it to Congress to make a law, because at that point they can just ram it through, because these industries that might otherwise be lobbying against it are already on board. They do it very quickly at the last minute, so there's no public upswell. And even then, public upswell is very rare. It takes a lot to get enough people worried about something to you know,
yeah, I know.
And with this kind of thing, people are always tend to say, well, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, you have nothing to hide. What
nothing
are you
to hide.
About?
Right. A fucking bullshit argument.
And frankly, I think the default should be, you know, highly secure encryption on fucking everything.
Yeah.
You know, if the government, and as is pointed out in this Glenn Greenwald article, if the government really wants to eavesdrop on you, they can do it the old-fashioned way. They can get a warrant. They can come in. They can sneak into your house while you're not
there. Yeah, I don't
have
a problem with them getting a justifiable warrant in order to fucking, like, go and investigate somebody.
But they need to have some reason to do it. Even if all your stuff is encrypted, they can throw a keylogger on your computer or whatever and get in. They just have to go through the process of getting the warrant and doing things the old-fashioned way.
Yes,
the problem is all of this other stuff, and this goes for the phone companies and for for the back doors for this other internet stuff, all of what this is set up for is to allow this kind of surveillance to be routine, as opposed to something that you have to have a damn good reason for.
And you and I are in total agreement on this, that it fucking shouldn't be.
Right. You know, they want to be able to just turn on and listen to whoever they want, whenever they want, without having to go through a big process to do it. And in many cases, they want to just have it turned on routinely, listening to fucking everything.
Right.
So that they can have automated data mining to sort of pull out interesting things,
yeah,
or retroactively go after folks where, oh, you know, we're now suspicious of Sam for something. Let's go look at what he did last month.
Well, let's face it, you're a very suspicious guy.
I am a very suspicious guy.
I'd fucking want to listen to everything you say.
Yeah, well, you know, right now you could go and watch me on my live webcam.
That's right.
I have the sound turned off right now, but my new version of my webcam, I can turn on the sound and let you listen to what's going on in my house real time.
There you go.
You know, that should be in everybody's house.
Absolutely.
You know, and we're not there yet, and of course it's hyperbole, but, you know, the Greenwald article mentions, you know, what's to keep them from saying, you know, every television should have the ability to turn on a microphone and report back.
Right.
You know, if you want global surveillance, why the fuck not? I mean, you know, right now I'm sitting in front of a computer with a webcam and a microphone. You know, why not have it just constantly sending back an audio and video stream to whoever might care in the government?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's further than anyone's going today. Although that one school district did get busted for doing exactly that on the laptops they gave their students. I don't know if you remember that about a year ago.
No, I didn't hear that.
School district in Pennsylvania. It was one of the free laptop projects where every student in the high school got a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
But it was set up so that the administrators of the laptops could at will peek in on the camera on the laptop.
Oh, what the fuck?
And so, of course, they were like, this is only there in case it gets stolen and we can find it. But then they found evidence that the administrators were just peeking in at the students in their rooms whenever they felt like it.
Great.
Maybe not quite whenever they felt like it, but there was a lot of abuse.
Yeah, but I.
And the problem with a lot of these things is once you give them the capability, whatever is initially said about, like, okay, this is only for this very, very specific situation, and we promise we won't abuse it, and we'll only do this one little thing here. Once the ability is there, it will get abused, and even absent outright abuse, over time, the uses will grow and grow and grow. As an example, and then we'll wrap it up here, Patriot Act stuff. There were a lot of additional capabilities that were given specifically to fight terrorism.
Right.
Some studies after the fact have shown that 99.5% of the time, and I'm making up that exact number, almost all of the time the new capabilities were used, they were not used for terrorism purposes. They were used for drug cases or other things.
What a shocker.
You know, and it's like, really? Anyway, you give government power, it will be abused. That has to be the assumption you come in going in. And for that matter, you give corporations power, they'll abuse it too.
Totally agree.
Same damn thing. So you have to, and I'm not generally in favor of tons and tons of laws restricting what corporations and people can do, but I think in a lot of these cases here, certainly in the case of the government, you need it. Maybe in some cases, the corporations need it too. You know, there needs to be a high default towards, like, if the government is going to intervene on what you're doing, they need to pass a really high bar. And that bar has been getting lower and lower and lower and lower. And I think it's a really bad trend that if we don't reverse it, you know, we're going to run into a lot of trouble in future years.
Well,
and unfortunately, I don't see, like, the actual momentum building to reverse any of this stuff. I see it getting worse first.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, I think that's it, unless you have some closing words.
No, we're out.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. This has been Curmudgeon's Corner. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, or solutions to my computer problems.
Yes.
And tell your friends to listen. For once, I think we had a good set of topics this week, unlike
yes,
the last
we
couple
did.
Weeks. So
I will tell you this. I will confess. I actually started putting topics together yesterday. All right, in order to what the hell happened with my computer?
I started noting some things.
What the hell's this thing? Shut up!
Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Tell your friends to listen to. Retweet us. Post us on Facebook. You know, all the other stuff to tell your friends. We like listeners.
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Goodbye.